How did you get involved with the DEA?
I came out of a graduate school, and at the time I wanted a career in law enforcement. My grandfather was a Chicago policeman, and I always was intrigued about being able to go all over the country and actually all over the world, and I felt strongly for the mission that we perform. So it was a home run for me.
Were you nonetheless kind of surprised by some of the things you discovered as you got into DEA work?
You know, after doing it for 25 years, not a lot scares me anymore. But the thing, you know, the job has changed tremendously. And I think that's why it's so important that we get our young, talented people involved, because the technical side of it has changed, but you still have to work on the street and you still have to be prepared to get placed in positions where you could get hurt. So it really has evolved to kind of a different level than it was 25 years ago when I started.
How has the technical side changed?
Well, clearly, as the organizations we work become more sophisticated in the way that they communicate, the way they move their proceeds, their money around the world, we've got to step it up too. So in the old days, a wiretap was just a hard line in a house. Well, now it's gone from there to cell phone, to satellite phone, to a variety of different social medias that the bad guys are communicating on. So it's really stepped up our technical abilities to try to infiltrate the organizations.
I'm trying to remember what you said during your presentation. You caught a couple guys even using, was it Xboxes to communicate?
Yeah. Most recently we just had a case where we had a bad guy in Mexico communicating with a guy in Chicago over Xbox. And the only way we really found that out was having an undercover agent involved. So they're going to use whatever they could use to get the job done. And as I say so many times, we've got to play by the rules. They don't. We've got to get judges' approval at the highest level of DOJ to listen to telephones, to monitor those things, where they don't. So it really is a cat-and-mouse game. Whenever we punch, they counterpunch, and it's been that way probably since the beginning of time.
You mentioned Chicago in that last answer. What happens in Chicago, you say, also impacts what happens perhaps right out in this region, Macomb, Western Illinois.
Right. There's no doubt in my mind. Chicago, for the Mexican criminal organizations, is one of two hubs in the country, Atlanta being the other. Virtually everything they do here in the Midwest originates from Chicago. The way that they transport their narcotics, their weapons, the way that they move the proceeds back, all have to do with Chicago and the surrounding communities. So clearly here, and the interstate arteries in which you're working with are part of the network in which they utilize.
You place an emphasis on some towns that have developed a larger Latino population over the last decade or two. I'm thinking of Beardstown, Monmouth, some of these downtown communities.
Well, I mean, clearly that's something that we're very aware of because these criminal organizations do like to hide amongst hardworking Mexican Americans. That's what they do for their cover. And so, we do see some investigations going to smaller rural areas that we never saw before.
You said heroin looks like it's going to be the drug of choice for the next 10 or 20 years?
You know, that's our concern. If we look across the spectrum of our investigations, our heroin investigations are really up threefold, and that's alarming. But the reason it's alarming is because the heroin in which they're trafficking now is more potent, more deadly, but it can be smoked or snorted, much like cocaine. So gone is the fear of using a needle or AIDS or hepatitis, and it's really attracted a completely different user base.
Well, that would be sort of like marijuana is much stronger now than it was 20 or 30 years ago.
Absolutely. But just the way heroin's being ingested, I think, is really attracting people that would never have used it before.
Is that why you think it's growing in popularity, because there's no longer the needles involved? Is that the only thing? Or?
Well, clearly, there's a number of different issues. Cosmetically, it's completely different looking. It's very clean. There is no needle involved in it. It's much more potent, and actually, the price has come down. So in terms of marketing, the organizations have done a fine job doing it, and unfortunately, Chicago is seeing the brunt of that.
You talked during your presentation, if you're using drugs, just smoking a joint, you're helping fund terrorists. Can you explain that?
You know, that's really the message we want to push. Small amounts of marijuana lead to large amounts of marijuana. We know particularly that the Mexican cartels, their cash crop is marijuana. It's where they make most of their money. That allows their other illegal enterprises. But we also know from investigations that much of that money can be diverted to subvert the Mexican government, to go to the FARC operating in Colombia, even to the Middle East or in the Afghanistan region. So it is a real important part of our strategy. Terrorism now is not confined to what we thought it was. It's confined to criminal organizations, and I think that's really the mentality that we have to take.
So would you say there's a direct link between Mexican drug cartels and Al-Qaeda?
Well, clearly we've seen just here in the last couple weeks with the potential assassination of the Saudi ambassador in Washington, we've seen a direct terrorist-sponsored country, Iran, interfacing with what they believe to be a Mexican cartel member. So I think that speaks for itself, and that to me is very alarming.
Do you think the U.S. military needs to get involved at some point? Will it reach that level?
I don't think so. I think obviously we work side by side with the military on a lot of our intelligence capabilities. But I think our agencies, in the way that we're beginning to really work collectively and share information across the board, we've seen quite a bit of success on that level, and I anticipate that only getting better.
If some of these drugs were legalized, do you think these cartels would just find something else to sell illegally in order to make money?
You know, I'm often asked that, and I wholeheartedly say no. Legalization is not going to solve anything. It would not eliminate the black market. It would not eliminate addiction. The cost to social services, healthcare systems, productivity, and the safety of the public, it would be unmeasurable, and I just don't understand why people continue to bring that up.
Do you ever feel unsafe in the job you're doing? You mentioned this Chapo Guzman was overheard putting a hit out on you, basically, or inquiring about putting a hit out on you.
Well, that's part of the job. If you're worried about that, you know, you'd be paralyzed. We're very good at what we do. We know what we're doing, and it is, unfortunately, an inherited risk with the job.
What's a memorable case that you worked on?
Well, I think one of the biggest cases, you know, that I can remember was several years ago where we worked an outlaw motorcycle gang that had direct ties into Mexico, and they were dealing in pound quantities of methamphetamine, but more alarming, they were also dealing and selling weapons and were basically assassins for hire here in the United States. So that kind of encompassed everything, the drug side, the Mexican side, but also the domestic-born terrorism that organization really was responsible for. So, yeah, that was a nice, very nice case, I think, that had ramifications on many levels.
You talked about drug trafficking today. Do you see these cartels being involved in human trafficking at all?
Well, clearly they are. There's just no doubt about that. They are opportunists, and they're very adept at smuggling things across the border, whether it be human trafficking, narcotics, or illegal goods. So I'm sure at many levels they're intertwined. And, again, if there's money to be made, they're involved.
We hear sometimes in the immigration debate the idea of putting up a fence or a wall along the border. Would that have any effect?
You know, I'm for any deterrent we can on that issue, but having worked down there, it's going to be pretty tough to do and maintain. I think we're better served with some of the new electronic surveillance things they have along the border and sharing intelligence information with our Mexican counterparts to try to preempt some of these organizations crossing, and we're seeing that success.
You said Juarez might be the most dangerous city in the world right now. What makes it so?
Well, it's clearly, in the last several years, has been in the middle of two cartels battling to the death to try to control the corridor that provides into the United States. We've seen literally thousands of drug-related homicides there, businesses being blown up, extorted. It is definitely a war zone. Now the military has been deployed there, which I think is a really good thing. They're trying to restructure the municipal police department to get more of a sense of community law enforcement there, and we're working closely with them. But it's a tough place right now.
Is Chapo Guzman involved in that city?
Yeah. The Sinaloa cartel in which he heads is very, very active in Juarez and has been working against the Juarez cartel for several years now. So they're at war. They'll continue to be at war because it's so vital to their operations to control that corridor.
And you feel he's the most dangerous criminal in the world right now?
There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, I'm not thoroughly briefed on all the terrorist suspects, but I think that his criminal organization is probably the most vicious I've ever seen, and I think the world's ever seen.
And what do they do that makes them so vicious?
Well, they'll do anything to make a dollar. They will not think twice about killing. They'll not think twice about killing women and children to make a point, to beheading people on video and posting it on the Internet. I mean, whatever it takes for him to get his job done, he's willing to do. And I don't think we've seen the likes of him.
What's it going to take to take him out or bring him to justice?
We've come very, very close to him in the last several years, and it's a matter of time. What I anticipate probably will happen, he'll either be arrested and face justice here in the United States, or he'll die at the hands of one of his rivals.
Why? What do these crime leaders fear so much about being brought across the border into the U.S.? You mentioned they don't want to be brought here to face justice.
Right. It's our system's solid. They can't build their own prison. They can't bribe anybody. They can't have their girlfriends come in. When they come here, they're going to serve the time, and that's what they fear the most. And they recognize that our system is solid.
Class you spoke to today, what message do you hope they left with?
Well, I was trying to get across the part that we have to look across the spectrum of crime, and we can't leave one element out. These organizations now, this is a transnational issue, narcotic trafficking, and it clearly generates billions of illegal dollars, which we have to watch because of the terrorist link. So trying to get them to look at a global issue and find, you know, just where they could fit in that fight, I think, is really important to get across at a young age.
And that they are in some ways like a lawful corporation in that they're diversifying.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen them. I mean, any organization that has that much capital is going to try to diversify in the event that one part of its business slows down. They still have revenue generating from another part of the business. So much like a legit model that we see all the time fluctuating with the economy.
Anything you want to add?
No, other than, I really appreciate an opportunity coming down here. We try to do this as much as we can. These are the future agents. These are the young kids that are going to be faced with this problem for the next 25 years.
All right, thanks.
You got it. Thank you.